Again, my name's Joel, from Microsoft. I do some of my other things, security and governance on cloud workflows. I sit on also the board of directors for the CDSA. And it's good to see actually a number of familiar faces, so it looks like the message is landing. I'd like to again introduce Larry Kasanoff, CEO and executive producer on a number of very well-known titles, among them Terminator 2, True Lies, Mortal Kombat, Dirty Hands. And then also we are joined by Eric Geisler, CEO of G2 Immersive. They specialize in VFX, other post-production, animation, and another one of our close partners in building cloud workflows. Eric, is there anything else you can add? I know there's some other things.
We also work in virtual reality as well as a lot of post workflows and post cloud workflows, which we're not concentrating on.
And in case you haven't seen his IMDb profile, also is your Time Emmy winner.
Yes.
Thank you.
So. We're just gonna basically pick up right where we left off a little bit earlier this morning. I think we did a good job of exploring the business behind why production can move to the cloud. So I think for about the next 20 minutes, what we want to do is get into some of the technical details. What kinds of tools are being used? What it means to actually implement some of these production capabilities. So that's why it's great to have these two individuals, because they are very much focusing on how the stuff works, because they have to make it work. They've got production deadlines, they've got budgets to mine. Actually, let's start with Eric. I just want to give a quick overview of what you think cloud brings on the technical production side.
So it's really interesting, because the era that we're in right now is kind of groundbreaking, because now you really don't have to have like the brick and mortar sort of facility, and it's got challenges, but it's got some really interesting upsides, and that is that you can source your talent realistically anywhere in the world or anywhere geographically located that you want them to be, and that means that now, from a managerial perspective. On a project, you now get to sort of cherry pick sort of the best of the best and assemble a team that you can work on virtually. In visual effects, animation, post-production, these are very, very heavily demanding, resource demanding activities. So we're always looking for the fastest computers and the most amount of architecture we can get our hands on. The fact is now, the other thing that the cloud does is it makes it able, you can scale incredibly quickly. So if you need to all of a sudden have a render farm, that's 100,000 units versus 10,000 units, you can do that over, press a button. So the technology is finally mature enough where the artist who's sitting, at the facility, wherever it will be, doesn't really see a lag when they're working on a computer that is, say, 200 miles away. And that's really what this is all about. And it's taken a lot of time for it to mature, but it is here now. We are using it on a daily basis. It is ready to go. So as we embrace it, the workflows, we figure out, what the roadmap ahead, so to speak, is to figure out what are the tripping barriers, what things do we need to improve, and that's why the people at Microsoft have been very instrumental in helping, to figure out what that looks like. So we are now at an age where computing is elastic, so you can decide how much you want, when you want it, and it can grow or shrink depending on what you need.
Okay. So let's. We were just talking during the break on a couple of different points. So, Larry, let me ask a question. Where's your stuff?
No idea. We were talking about that.
I said earlier we don't have, because these guys, we no longer have a cold room. So then we are constantly. We are constantly cleaning our facility and looking for stuff, and we've got tapes and hard drives, and we clean it out, and we don't know where it is. And I mean, we know where our good stuff is. We never lost anything we need. So we think, what the hell is all this stuff? And we would like to really get out of the what the hell all, where the hell or what the hell is all this stuff business. As I said, the you know, when we really work on stuff, we know where all the good stuff is. We don't know what all this other stuff even is. So, I mean, I do think there's an efficiency. And honestly, you said it, I bet all you guys have it. I mean, everyone has this. And it's time to not have it.
So, how about you, Eric? Do you know where your data is?
But yeah, most of the time.
Oh, it's only 30 minutes ago.
But it's scattered. And it's on a bunch of hard drives from a bunch of different manufacturers that I hope will work when I play.
No, but I think we make a movie, we know where the movie is. It's just, what is this thing that is labeled X, Y, and you got to look at it, because what if it's something you didn't think about, but that's what we don't know.
Yeah, and there's and they can't, you know, well, you made an interesting point. It used to be that there were cans of film, right? So you had, like, not that long ago, we had cans of film, and you knew where the film was. It was in a can. It was in a lab. But now there's you know, you can make infinite copies. You have data. There are hard drives, you know, built by the lowest bidder. and hopefully your data is going to be okay. So one of the advantages of the cloud workflow that we were just talking about is the fact that, okay, archiving is a cinch. You just move your data from, like, an expensive, relatively more expensive tier of storage over to a really inexpensive tier of storage that you don't have to use right away. So that's a big advantage, and we're talking about how do we clean out those closets with all the hard drives and get everything up there, because then you know where it is. The other thing is there's tools that are built in to the Azure workflow that allow you to index all of the material there. And there's new artificial intelligence programs that are running in the background that can help you transcribe interviews, or you have facial recognition, or even sentiment recognition on what people are thinking. So it's very interesting.
So I know that there's something you talked about before that you're reminding me that disk drives are not forever.
Right.
And this was only pointed out to me like 6 months ago or so, and you know, really made me think that disk drives die, even if they're not being used, because the rubber gaskets and things like that start breaking down, air gets into the drive, and it is not completely unreadable. And so even if it was something that was your important stuff that you thought was a backup, it might not be there anymore. So let's talk a little bit about archiving. What does it mean, and you know, how do you think you will fold archive into what you do and use the tearing capabilities, like you said, of, you know, you've got the stuff that you're working on with your nearline, you know, super fast storage, and then it needs to age out automatically and move on to archive.
My experience, anytime you have any kind of a production pipeline or workflow, it's kind of like a freeway. If anytime there's an on or off ramp, it's a problem. It's a potential for a problem. You think it won't be, but it is. So anytime you have to say to the assistant editor or anyone else, well, go upstairs to this place and get this and bring it, it doesn't work some of the time. No matter what, and then when you multiply that times a lot of man days, times of production, it's a lot of time and money, and usually something doesn't happen, and I find myself in the middle of every production saying to someone, I know we have that somewhere, you know, and so it's like a production. If you look at a movie, you say, how do we shave money off of a movie? It's usually not one big way, it's a lot of little ways. This is what I think is the advantage of it, is it's always in one place, you always know where it is, it's always indexed, there's no going upstairs and looking through the box anymore. You're simply eliminating from that freeway, which is your pipeline, another on and off drive, which another exit, on and off exit, which is always a potential for a problem. That's what I mean.
Yeah, the other thing is that you invariably we're always looking for stuff, you know, and the version that's online of the cut or the reel is the one that's the easiest to grab. The other thing that happens is that There's a lot of information that also doesn't get migrated, so it's really a headache. I mean, there used to be film, and film was like lasted. It was made of a plastic that would last X number of years, and there was an archival process they still do today, where they actually shoot stuff back onto archival quality film, even stuff that has been shot digitally, because like the best of the DVDs or archivable hard drives still will not last 20 years. To get something to last 100 years is actually really hard to do. So now that things are being shot digitally and there's no film copy of the original negative, I think we really have to think really hard about our libraries.
I think there's another aspect of this too, which is now you're working with people all over the world, as I said earlier today, and now you can look to the extent that you have a project with those people at the same archive. You're looking at the same thing. You're not wondering where they kept it or where you kept it. You're looking at the same thing. The efficiency of that is extraordinary.
So I think for both of you, we have a room full of implementers and technology experts. So as we, you know, we start moving in this direction of cloudifying everything, what do you want from them? You know, what is it that's going to make your lives easier through this process?
Access. I think the really important thing is just to get people to do it. Once we start implementing these cloud-based workflows, and once you guys start using it, it'll just become the norm. People have a hard time trusting in something that they can't see, and the cloud is one of those things that you can't visualize. I've been fortunate that I've been able to actually go to one of the many facilities, and so I've got to see how secure it is. I've got to see, you know, how it all works, you know, behind the curtain. And the thing is that you walk away from that knowing that, oh wow, my data is more secure there than it would be in a hard drive in my closet, because there's people who care about it, whose jobs it is on a daily basis to make sure that your data is working, to make sure that you have access to it. So access and really just starting to work on the cloud is what I think would be starting.
Yeah, I think exactly the same thing. I said it earlier today. We have to make this like WhatsApp. Everyone said do it. So wherever you can make it, not only do it, but teach others to do it and just get everyone to do it. And, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, sometimes when a studio wants to vet a facility, that the cloud's a little new to them, we have to make it not new. But it'll happen very, very quickly. Because this goes, you know, we're talking about film. It wasn't that long ago that it was film. Now you can't imagine a guy with the scissors and an editing. That really wasn't that long ago.
So let's wrap up on archive a little bit, going back to the hard drive issue and related to something that a lot of people here undoubtedly deal with. And that's the shift in technology. So you mentioned that some things, you know, are almost forever. You know, film is sitting in a salt mine in Utah. But standards change. And even though you might be archiving to a tape library, you go from LTO 5 to 6, and then to 7, and you gotta upgrade these gigantic libraries. Does cloud help with that? Is there a benefit?
Yeah, I mean, who remembers exabyte tape? Yeah, not that long ago, we were archiving stuff on exabyte tape. Like, who has an exabyte tape recorder player? I have one, and I got it on eBay. And I got it on eBay because I had some exabyte tapes, and I'm like, if I have to get something off of those exabyte tapes. But then I had another problem. I had to buy a computer, an old Silicon Graphics computer, and I kept it in the garage just in case I needed to access the exabyte tape. Similarly, there was an edit that was done on a way old version of editing software, and I had to have that and a computer with FireWire 800 so that I could access the FireWire 800 drives. The beauty of the cloud for me is that I don't have to like deal with all of that. The data is in one place. There's people who are the custodians of it, who are watching my data, making sure it's secure, and I have access to it whenever I need to. Migrating data through technology is hard, because you know there's CDs, there's DVDs, there's FireWire, there's like all these different standards are changing on a daily basis. This new computer doesn't support this thing anymore, and this doesn't support that thing anymore. It's tough, and the way that a lot of us have dealt with it is by having old computers and old technology, just so that we could read that technology and be able
to have a 3/4 inch tape player.
I'm sure.
You know, I mentioned earlier we have Black Belt TV, which is a SVOD service, and you know, it's largely the same content everywhere in the world, but there are differences, and sometimes in certain countries you have to change certain things. Now it all will sit in one main cloud storage area, and anywhere in the world we want to change it, we want the delivery requirements to change. Boom. I mean, we used to have people who did nothing but upload and play out this stuff, and now we don't have to add none of it. It's all automated. It's extraordinary.
So let's take a step back from saving all of your data, and what does Eric?
Yeah.
What do you do your editing, your cutting on today?
So Media Composer on a system that is, you know, sitting in the office, but you know we're testing Media Composer now in the cloud, which is a fully cloud-based version of Avid that runs essentially the same as it does in the office. So that's what we will be cutting on.
Historically, what?
We used to use Final Cut, and we used to use Final Cut, now we use Premiere on Macs.
So one of the things that we've been hard at work is partnering with Avid, so as you mentioned, getting things over the cloud. Avid is moving basically all of their workflows to support hybrid, so that you can have Nexus storage sitting in your sitting in your facility and have that paired with a Nexus file system in Azure. See that all is a single media bin, so that anybody can work on this stuff from anywhere. So you know, the global workforce that you both.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that too is that when you deploy it out to somebody, you can send them a link, and they can just open it up in a web browser, and then it just starts this virtual machine, and now they're up and running. And as long as they have an okay internet, it doesn't have to be like a super fast internet connection. They literally could be sitting at Starbucks and start cutting a feature.
Probably don't want them working on Starbucks,
but you know what I'm saying. They literally could be. The good news is the data isn't they don't get to keep the data. So even if they did, you know, do something or were somewhere you didn't want them to be, your data is safe somewhere else. But it is a link. Like, you can deploy a link, they click a link, it opens up, and it feels like they're working on a workstation that's sitting in an office. And it's that interactive. There's also a company called Teradici. You guys may be familiar with it. They're working on creating this a workflow so that you have multiple monitors, so you can have not just one, but two or three monitor, like a playout monitor. So the experience is really feels exactly like you're cutting with the machine right there, and it's almost like there's no difference. And as soon as you start using it, you know, it feels like there's no difference from a user.
And do you feel, from an editorial standpoint, that color matching and audio sync, all these kind of things, does it still work?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that Teradici is working on, is creating color fidelity that's synchronized across, and there's standards for the color. That's 100%. As long as you are using a computer that's got a known color profile on the monitor, you're good to go.
And so the last question that we got in the panel this morning was about bandwidth.
Yeah.
And bandwidth is very important if you are working on high resolution content in real time.
Yeah.
But that's not always necessary. So can you both talk some about that remote edit scenario and how that works?
Sure. I mean, I'm never cutting with high res material ever. So the material is always like a transcode or a down-res version of whatever we're shooting anyway, in the edit bay. So that stuff is pretty lightweight. So on set, a lot of dailies are being transcoded on set immediately anyway. So that's already happening. And then that gets put up into the cloud, and then that's, we can start having access to it immediately. It's about, I'm gonna say, probably looking at 1/60th of the storage that the original negative would take is what the dailies will probably take. So as long as you know, get that material to an upload facility or put it on some hard drives that then you send out, you know, back up to a cloud facility to put that stuff up there, it's relatively fast, especially on a daily space.
You know, we get that question a lot, just, I mean, Joe's referring to, well, what if we're in a place shooting where we don't have the bandwidth to upload our stuff? I never understand that question. I mean, again, it wasn't so long ago that you put stuff on a can of film, flew it to another country to be processed and flew it to another country. But all that aside, I mean, I've shoot some pretty remote locations. I've never been more than an hour away from a base camp, which is incredibly well connected, where you can simply do that. I mean, you know, by SAG rules, you can't be, if you're more than an hour away from your set, you're it's a lot of penalties and stuff. So the notion that you're somewhere in the middle of some desert and you're never going to be somewhere, you're never going to, I think if that's what you're doing, uploading is not really your problem.
Okay, so I think that covers the editorial side of things pretty well. The tools are coming that will make it possible to be, you know, eventually completely cloud-based. In the interim, there are hybrid mechanisms to allow people to work both locally and from the cloud. Disaster recovery, I think, is another important element here, where, you know, maybe there's an earthquake or unfortunately, a tsunami or things like that, where facilities and people and materials could be lost. So, just if you can talk a little bit about, you know, what do you do for DR today, and you know, how do you think you could recover from an incident in the future?
DR is disaster recovery.
Yeah.
Oh well, I literally was just in Kathmandu where we're working with a facility, and unfortunately, people were. Devastating earthquake not too long ago, so it's a real issue. No, so that's actually really simple and great. Everything, every day, is put into the cloud every day. So God forbid something happens to any facility, I mean, it's terrible for the, you know, human life of the facility or whatever, but for the data, you don't skip a beat. You never can be more than a day behind.
Yeah, the other good thing is that the architecture of the cloud is actually replicated. So instead of like your place being in your data being in one location, it's in several locations, you know, all the time. So we used to do that back in the day with, you know, with print, like you would get dailies, you'd make copies, and then that stuff would go, one set of hard drives would go to some other location so that your data was safe just in case of disaster. The great thing about cloud-based things is that your data is literally like maybe in 50 locations simultaneously. Always being backed up, always being safeguarded. So it's infinitely more secure than having something physical on site, because you never know when something's going to happen.
So editorial is something that's fairly new to be cloud-based. Yeah. The tools are still in the process of being essentially redeveloped to work in that mode. Rendering, however, that's been around for a while. Sadly, Microsoft was a little bit late to that particular game, but there's a lot of strides that have been making in, you know, strategic partnerships with Autodesk and Adobe and others that play significantly in that space. Let's get even more technical. And so what does the architecture look like for that flow when you're going to do a VFX shot? You know, how does that go from modeling to simulation, you know, to out to the cloud to be rendered? How does that work?
Sure. So the way that it works today is you're sitting, you know, at a workstation, you're making some decisions on, you know, particular shot, and then you're taking it and you're getting it ready and packaging it up to render it off and to get like the finished image. It's very time consuming. Sometimes. On a feature, some frames take an hour to generate, or more. It depends on, you know. And then you figure there's 1,440 frames, in a minute, and that's 1,440 hours. times the number of minutes there are in a feature, and you just start thinking about, your head will explode when you like start to think about the number of hours that it goes into. So because rendering is elastic on the cloud, because it's elastic, meaning that you can, so you can sort of decide based on your budget and your deadline how fast you want it to be. The other great thing is that, let's say there's a shot and you're gonna, you know, you don't need it right away. You can, so you can also, you know, prioritize it down, and you can do a thing where you're like, I just want, I'll take it when I can get it, and that's a lot more economical than if I need it right this second. But the good news is that because it's elastic, you now are, so I remember back in the day, when you were working on stuff, I used to work at a company that used to do stuff I called Digital Domain. And we had like a huge amount of computing at that facility. And we would win contracts on shots because specifically we could handle the workload. We had enough computing at the facility to be able to handle a certain workload. Nowadays, you know, you can compete with that just saying, okay, well, I've got the workload at my fingertips. So rendering is completely revolutionized because you're not bound to a physical workstation that you used to be. You now have a virtual workstation that acts just like the physical workstation. And it acts so, it's so good at it that the other thing is it saves you a lot of time, because in the old days you used to go, okay, I'm gonna load all this software on this one machine. Okay, now I gotta load all the software on this machine. Oh, I made a change to this machine. Okay, now I gotta load it on this machine. Oh, now I gotta load it on this machine. Oh man, I gotta make another change. And you go round and round. The great thing in the virtual machine is you just create a new virtual machine, and then you can like spin up as many of those as you want. And all the software's already loaded, so your IT time goes way down. And that's really what this is all about. It's about IT infrastructure going down.
You know, you guys all know this, but rendering is always an enormous pain in the ass. Our render problem that we had was huge, and you always have these render jockeys, and everyone's sitting, and you're 6 hours in, and boom, the whole thing fails, and you start all over again. So it happens all the time when you have it, but still a lot of facilities overseas, I talked about working globally, that's how they do it, because labor is cheap, so having render jockeys is cheap. But what people don't talk about a lot in terms of this cloud rendering, because it can be better. You know, rendering ultimately will be the decision tree that affects how good your digital stuff looks, because the better you render and the more sophisticated you are with it, it looks better. That means you can make a lower budget production, or you can upgrade the work perhaps of a facility or artist in some remote place because the rendering is better. So we're much more, while it is a great cost efficiency, the quality difference is what we're most interested in.
So since we only have a couple of minutes, let's take a couple of questions.
I have two questions. One was on your BCDR. We're in another cloud provider, and so my question is, I don't know how it is with Azure, but the pricing model, when you start splitting your data into multiple zones, it can get significantly more expensive. So we're looking at, do we split everything in two zones, or just back up in two zones? Do we want multiple zones for improving delivery globally? So, you know, what was your decision process like on that? And then the other thing is, still with BCDR, what about, we're looking at, okay, what if our cloud provider goes down? Yeah, there's a lot bigger things, but are you looking at, you know, the ability to move from one cloud provider to another for BCDR specifically?
Well, I'll answer the second question because it's much easier. You know, we're just not terribly worried that Microsoft's going out of business anymore.
They are.
They are.
Any of you were higher.
It's definitely a concern. Where are you going to have your data, and what's the cost benefit, right? You want it to be in more than one location, but there's a cost benefit, right? It's going to cost you X or Y. The good news is, depending on, you know. And I can't speak to the other infrastructure because I know very little about the other cloud infrastructure. That's all of my experience has been with Azure. So, but I can tell you that, you know, it's only as good as it's spread out, right? And so your data is only as safe as it is spread out. And there is a cost benefit to it, but it is worth it as long as you have your information spread out in a number of different locations. The one thing that I love about the Microsoft side of things is they've got a ton of different locales around the world where the data can be replicated. So there is a cost benefit.
And I think that pricing in particular is something that's eminently addressable. If you look to your left, one of our account representatives is here. So if you want to have that conversation, you can do that. But in addition to having the data distribution, there's the benefit that no matter what you're doing or where you're doing it, you're going to have to pay something in order to get that disaster recovery, whether it's replicating to the fault line or you're keeping it on your location. There are going to be risks associated with anything. On the pricing, there are ways to protect that, not only on the licensing agreement, but there are multiple tiers. So, if the provider that you're on right now is directing you to, you want to keep everything in warm storage because you might need to use it right away, there's going to be a lot of the content, like they're saying all the stuff that's in closets on hard drives. That doesn't need to be an expensive hot storage. Move that off to archive where it's fractions of a penny per gigabyte per month. So that the cost of having that and of having the fact that we're backing up, we are giving you an SLA that says this is immutable storage. It's it might take a couple hours, but it's going to be there when you want it.
There's one really good point to this, and that's that from a content creator standpoint, I'd rather put my content with a company that isn't going to go into business against me. And that happens on other service providers, that's all.
To drill down a little bit more on the cost of ownership subject, so I'm wondering what kind of due diligence you guys did when you made the decision to go to the cloud to figure out if there was cost benefit or cost reduction associated with the cloud versus doing your on-premises thing and what that involved.
Well, for us it was really simple. I mean, running a huge cold room in Los Angeles is extraordinarily expensive just in terms of a cooling unit. So we had 3 5-ton air conditioning systems running 24/7 just to cool. That alone, right there, was it. But the thing that we were really concerned about was security. And as I mentioned earlier, as Eric mentioned, we've been fortunate. I've been to more than one of the facilities. So my due diligence was really that. I wanted to see it, feel it, walk around it. And I just think it's incredibly secure. It's more secure than my place. So the money was easy, but the security was something I wish everyone could see, because once you see that, you realize there are people doing nothing but guarding your stuff 24/7 in an incredible way. Then when you realize, and again, we have had disaster recovery, we have had that, and we did have a fire once, so we've been through all that. So when we then, for us, it was an easy decision.
What about your finance people, though? I know corporations, the accountants, they like to capitalize assets, and when you go to the cloud, it's a subscription model.
Yeah, but here's the problem. They like to capitalize assets, but the reality is anytime you buy any computer, what we do, 2 seconds later, you don't really, it's crap already. So you're not really capitalizing over that long a period because computers age out so quickly in the kind of stuff that we do. So from a finance point of view, it was also a pretty easy. And again, the enormous reduction from us comes from the ability to use people all over the world in a workflow. So the actual cost of the cloud to us was minimal relative to what it could do.
The other thing that we're finding is that when you have physical workstations, they're always on. They're always working. You're always dealing with them. On the cloud-based stuff, it actually ends up being a lower cost in one regard that you don't have to have it all the time. So when you're not using something, you're not paying for it.
And the failure rate is lower.
But there's beyond just, and here's the problem, a computer will depreciate, from a bean counter perspective over 3 years, right? They depreciate them to zero in 3 years. They're worth zero in 3 years, right? You pay an enormous amount now, today, and next week. And the truth is, we'll probably use them a lot more than 3 years. But at the end of the day, how much are you losing when your artist doesn't have, is not working as fast as he could. And those are things that aren't really calculatable on the surface, but when you start to go, oh wow, you know, I didn't even really think about the fact that, you know, he's got the latest and greatest technology right now, he's way more efficient, that's the biggest cost in entertainment are the people, right? So.
Well, and the requirements are changing on you even faster than the technology.
Yes.
So right now everything is starting to move 4K, but as we saw at NAB,
talking about
8K, 16K, 21K for VR, it's, you know, their computers can't keep up.
You know, if you look at the regular consumer world, and you look at music, this is what music is. Spotify or whoever you are. But anyway,
we'll be around if you have more questions. Thank you very much to my team guests.